Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I try hard. I try freaking hard all the time. I literally am sweating. Can you see that? Can you see the sweat stains here? No. I try really hard. Joining me today is a guy who I see him, he's smiling, he's happy. He's like, he couldn't figure out how to hit record on Zoom properly and like where the settings were. And he's fine with that. The guy is killing it. His name is Aaron Marino. The whole thing started out for him with a YouTube channel called Alpha M. It's about lifestyle, grooming, and fitness. What's the thing that you said when I asked you? What's the one sentence?
Helping guys feel better about themselves. That's what it's about.
Yeah. So I'm like really into give me specifics. Don't tell me helping guys. Tell me how and all that. I'm into, well, let me figure out another new trick I could do in this Zoom thing and all that. Meanwhile, he gets onto YouTube, builds up a following, doesn't care that there's no money in it, doesn't care that YouTube is the place where you see one brother bite another brother's finger and the thing goes viral and it's meaningless. I'm just going to put it on there. And the channel slowly takes off. He follows it up by saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to create grooming products. And he creates Pete and Pedro and starts selling grooming products. He's doesn't sell advertising, but he's got a buddy, as you'll see, who sells his advertising. And then a mutual friend of ours also needed help selling his advertising. And so Aaron's little company starts selling his advertising. And now he's got Menfluential advertising. I can go through this whole list. I'm not going to because it's long. And it all started from him building a personality for himself on YouTube. The thing that drives me mental, though, is I wonder if I try too hard and I should just loosen the hell up. Because you're relaxed, you're happy, you're smiling so much more than I am. Even like when you couldn't figure out the record button, it was not, that's a problem, how is it going to come across? It's, ha-ha, I got it, right? Me, I'm sweating.
Was there a question in that, Andrew? I'm not sure.
No, it's an intro. I want to understand how you got to this place. And I think people are not going to really appreciate it until they understand the numbers behind it. Or maybe that's just my thinking. We can do this interview thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. The second will, they've got a podcast they want you to listen to. It's called Traffic Secrets. I'll talk about those later. Throw people numbers. Like how many people, what's the subscriber number on YouTube? And what's the overall revenue numbers for the business?
Businesses. Okay. So YouTube, 6 million followers. I'll hit 6 million followers hopefully this month. In terms
six,
of
6 million subscribers on YouTube. Can we just like highlight that? That's a huge thing.
It's a huge thing. And it's a huge thing when you consider that it took me, I think it was like 8 years to get to that first million. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it sort of took off. But everybody would always ask me, oh, you know, what's the secret? I have no idea. Just like you saw, Andrew, I'm not the most tech savvy person. And by not the most, my grandmother is with her little jitterbug phone is more tech savvy than I am. But yeah, I just kept posting videos just because I think for my entire life, I was seeking that validation and just people were listening to me and it felt amazing. And I think at that point I was at a super low point and just the fact that I found some place that I found my voice. And so for the first 6 or 7 years, I didn't make a penny off of YouTube. I didn't know how to make money.
Now, how much did you make last year, 2019?
In terms of gross revenue for all
gross
my businesses?
Revenue, yeah.
Over 25 million.
Over $25 million profit. How much
profit? No, that's gross revenue.
Yeah. How much profit? Sorry.
Millions
in profit. So you're clearly, yeah, you're doing well. And you're saying the whole
different
thing
business. See, but here's the thing, the different business. Whenever people want to talk to me about revenue and money, it's fine. There are certain businesses like the YouTube advertising. That business is basically just, you know, there aren't many expenses in that. And so, you know, obviously it's my time. I can't bill for my time or expense my time. I have a gentleman who sells my advertising that I pay a commission to, but that's just, you know, cash. And so, so that's a very, very lucrative business. And when you reach the level and you have the opportunities that have been afforded to me, you know, thankfully, you have the ability to do pretty well.
How much money from that? How much money from YouTube, roughly?
Roughly 5 million.
Good. By the way, I'm not looking for exact numbers. I don't want to become an accountant here. I just want to get a sense of scope of what you could do. If you're telling me you're basically at 6 million subscribers as of today. By the time it's published, you'll probably hit that number. 6 million subscribers, basically $1 per subscriber per year?
Yeah, but it's not that simple. Okay. That's a very, very
okay. I'm oversimplifying it. It does give me a sense of where you are. Let's go back then and understand how you got here. You've kind of told this to our producer, and you've expressed this to me a couple of times here in our conversation. The sense that you wanted the world to hear you. Why do you feel, going back to your childhood, that you're a person who needs this? Where does that come from for you?
Yeah, it came from growing up. I had two abusive stepfathers. And one of the things in the byproducts of that I came to realize was me losing my ability to stand up for myself and actually speak my mind, because I was more focused and worried at that point about not having to move schools or, you know, having to move in with my grandparents again. I just wanted everybody to get along. And so the little 12-year-old warped mind doesn't understand that this isn't your responsibility. It's not your fault. But as a result, I internalized everything and just kind of shut down. And then when I went to the fitness center, I asked my mom for a gym membership when I was 12 years old. And that was the point at which sort of everything started to change. I found my home. I found my place. I felt incredible. I felt confident for the first time in my life when I went to the gym. Now, when I went home, that kind of dwindled. But I think for my entire life, I was seeking that ability to speak and to connect with people on a deeper level. And so, because you
felt that there was between you and other people almost this wall, or what? Or that you felt that you couldn't express yourself to other people because you had to make peace at home and you had to be the guy who was just going to get along and go along and be quiet. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it was just me not feeling comfortable and being willing to potentially rock the boat in my family situation. That was the reason why I sort of shut down and I stopped, you know, communicating.
What type of abuse came from your two step-parents at different times?
Just emotional abuse. I mean, you know, my mother is the most amazing woman ever, but she made some unfortunate choices with men, you know.
And so how would they treat you and her?
It was emotional abuse. I mean, you know, I don't really care to go into it all that much.
The part that you took for yourself, did you sense a feeling that you were worthless, that you had nothing to, like, that you weren't?
No, not at all. And that's the one thing. I've always felt loved. I've always had an incredible support system when it came to my mother, my father. Even though they were divorced, my extended family, just nothing but love and support. But there were these two men that were in my life that treated me poorly, and I was not strong enough, because I was a young kid, to stand up for myself for fear of having to, you know, go through and endure another move, another school, another friends, you know.
Because they might make you move if they didn't like what you said?
Were your parents divorced, or are they
together? My parents were together. There was some friction at one point, and I do remember trying to, like, be even keeled, reduce the friction between them. And I actually have found that it wasn't to the level nearly of you, not nearly. I found that it was actually helpful for me. Now when the kids who are 5 and 3 at home go nuts, I can take that even keel, let it pass. They're going to scream their heads off, and then they're going to get back to sanity, and we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
For me,
it was strictly not wanting my parents, my mother and stepfather, to fight. I didn't want them to fight
because
over.
If you did something, they would fight with each other. Then she would break up with them. Then you would have to go somewhere else. That's the weight that you would have on your shoulders.
That was what I thought was on my shoulders. Yeah. But when you're 12 years old, you don't understand the magnitude or the ownership that you actually have. And that was what I was fearful of, because it happened a few times.
That because of you, your mom might have broken up.
No, it wasn't. Now.
Okay, we're getting
the reality.
Too personal.
You know, hindsight, it wasn't because of me. But when you're 12 years old, 11 years old, 10 years old,
you thought it was. Wow. What a thing to take on to your shoulders. Okay, and then you went into the gym. I used to go to the gym as a kid. We had a gym in my high school. It was such a nice little operation. I felt inferior going in there because people knew what they were doing. Why did you feel, this is my home? This is the place that's making me feel more of myself.
I loved it. It was ever since, you know, I saw the movie Rocky IV, And I saw The Russian, I saw Rocky. And at that moment, I knew, I'm like, if a body can look like that, that's what I want. And so going there, it was amazing. I loved everything about it. I loved the camaraderie. I loved, you know, all these older guys that would sort of, you know, sort of novel. I was a novelty. I was a young 12-year-old kid. I couldn't drive there. And I was, you know, just in love with fitness. I was doing push-ups and jumping rope to Vanilla Ice in my basement with my sand weights. Like I found what I wanted to do for the rest of my life when I was 12 years old.
And it was owning a gym.
Yep, that was it.
All right. Did you ever get to own a gym?
I did. I did a personal training studio, and that didn't work out.
What happened?
You know, that was there's so many facets and certain things. Okay, so before the gym, I met a gentleman. I moved to Atlanta. Met a gentleman and I helped him open a nutrition store and did that for 2 years, you know, opened a few of them, but it was at the time where there was, he wanted, in a nutshell, he wanted to sell things that were not necessarily legal or that were made illegal.
Like what?
And so I was not, and
we're talking about when I first heard illegal things that he was selling, I had this imagination that he was selling illegal drugs, but that's not it. It's just it's outside of the normal manufacturing and distribution channels, it sounds like. Am I right or what?
No, you're not right. You were right the first time.
Oh, really?
There was, wow. Yeah. There was this thing back in the day, and I'm going to date myself, called Blue Nitro. It was this liquid, that was basically like, it was a drug called G. I had not ever experienced it or been very familiar with it, but it was very big in the subculture of bodybuilding and fitness. And there was the sum of it is you would take a little bit of it and it would make you have a euphoric feeling. And you know, it messed with your serotonin levels. Well, some genius figured out that you could make this, manufacture it by utilizing this chemical called furanone dihydro. If you dilute 1 ounce of furanone dihydro in 31 ounces of water, add a little bit of food coloring and you know, something for flavor, you could sell it and people would buy it. And it was distributed and sold as a belt cleaner. But then, you know, that didn't last all that long. The government came in and said, wait a second, this is obviously not good. And they made it a schedule. I forget what it was specifically, but they made it illegal. And my friend that was in the industry that I was doing that with, in terms of the nutrition store, he figured out a way to manufacture it himself. He got a 55-gallon drum of the furanone dihydro and wanted to continue to sell it. And that was the point at which I said, this is crazy. I got to get out of here. And so I left and I went and took a job as a personal trainer at Crunch Fitness down in Atlanta. But during the time of the nutrition store, I met a woman named Linda and I helped her lose about 100 pounds. And she came to me and said, hey, she was an older woman. She said, I want to help other people the way that you helped me. I want to open a personal training studio. Would you like to do that with me? And I thought, jackpot, this is it. And so, that was it. We signed the lease on September 11th, which should have been an omen as to how that business was going to unfold and unwind. And it was. And so,
By the way, September 11th happened in the morning.
Yeah.
You could have woken up and said, you know what? I don't have to go sign this lease right now. I think we should see what happens.
The lease was signed. The equipment was going. The lease was.
You were already too far along.
That was not an option at that point.
I was trying to get a sense of how, like, maybe you were so desperate that despite the fact that it was going to work out, you had to have your 12-year-old dream come true. It's not that. It was already on track and you couldn't back out of it at that point. How well did it do?
Or chose not to back
or
out.
Chose not
I think
to.
That was yes.
Okay.
It did not do well. It did not do well. It was okay though, because at the time, that was my dream. And so I was working, you know, 80 hours a week, making $24,000 a year, but it didn't matter.
You told our producer, I highlighted this. You said I made $24,000 a year, but we did it. I was happy. Dude, if I make $25,000 a month, it's like destruction of my life. Who am I? Seriously, I'm like, how do you feel so happy at that point? Why do you feel so happy instead of
it was never
this
about
New York
the,
anxiety
for,
I've got?
for me, Andrew, I got, if I'm being completely honest with you, it was never about the money. Nothing I've ever done has been about the money. Now, I can't say that now. Certain things that I do now, obviously advertising, things of that nature, are, it is a business. But in terms of fitness, it was never about making $1 million. It was never about, you know, being crazy successful. I just wanted to feel successful personally. And I felt that at that point in my life, that was going to that was going to lead me to feel successful. And I think that's the thing that I've been chasing my whole life.
Also at the gym, you met a guy named Steve. What happened with Steve?
Steve was my, it's funny. We're going to go for a walk this evening. I'm still friends with him all this time later. He came to me. He was a meteorologist at the Weather Channel. He's one of our clients. And he said, "Hey, I've got a hot date. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to wear." I said, "Great." I said, "No problem. Let me come over. Let me see what you have. And while we're at it, why don't we go get your haircut? Because it's a little bit crazy and your nose hairs are nuts." And so I didn't realize, but I was setting up the foundation for an image consulting business. And so that happened. He went out on the date. It was a lot of fun. I had a blast. And he went back to work. And one of his coworkers said, "Hey, you know, you look great. What happened?" He said, "Oh, there's this guy. I got this guy." And she said, "Do you think he'd take my husband shopping?" And that's when it was like, oh, maybe there's a market for regular guys who just happen to know more about, you know, manscaping and shoes than they do about football, helping other regular guys just, you know, look good and feel great.
You do have great freaking style, and it's comfortable style. It doesn't look like it's worked on. Like even at one point, as you were putting your fingers through your hair, a few hairs popped up. It kind of just fit in. It was fine. It didn't look like you're overly paying attention to it. And then within seconds, somehow, before I even had a chance to tell you, "I think your hair is stuck up. You might want to adjust it." Just get back in. Was that always you?
That was always me.
Even at 10 years old, before you had this gym realization at 12, you were just...
Kindergarten. First day of kindergarten. My mom would tell the story of me. I was so upset. Okay, so two parts to this. And this is people are not interested in this, Andrew.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not. So do you remember Underoos? How old are
you? Yes, Underoos is like superhero underwear.
Right, of course. And I was super into Underoos. And I was so upset that you had to cover them up with pants. And so I would wear these Underoos on top of my pants. First day of school, she's like, "You can't wear the Underoos, but I'll let you scotch tape the ankles of your pants," because I hated the way that they flared. I was born in 76. And so this was probably early 80s. I was going to kindergarten and I was appalled at the flare in the pants. And so I took an entire roll of scotch tape, got both ankles. And so I've always been interested in this. I got a bad haircut when I was about 10 years old, said, "Mom, get me some clippers, get me some scissors. I'm going to learn to cut my hair myself." And that was, and that's all she wrote. Yeah, I loved it.
All right. This is a weird question, but did kids tease you for being so, for dressing well, for caring about it? Did they call you gay? Did they put you down?
Kids didn't, but as I sort of got older, you know, this was before sort of, you know, before it got more socially acceptable for guys to really take care of themselves. A lot of people assumed that I was gay because I did. I take care of myself. I have earrings and, you know, I'm a small guy. I'm 5'6" and, I'm not, you know, some big, you know, picture of masculinity, which is why the name Alpha M for my YouTube channel is slightly ironic, but there was a reason for that. And so, of course I got teased, but not by my peers. It was more people I didn't know and older people that just were kind of obtuse.
What's the thing about Alpha M that you're going to say?
The Alpha M thing. Everybody asked me that. It was just, I was thinking of a name for an image consulting company. I'm like, okay, I want to start image consulting. What's going to be the name? I didn't want it to be so like over the top, like King of the Jungle. I needed something that said men because that's all I wanted to deal with. And so I came up with Alpha M, a more stylized version of Alpha Male. And that was the story. And so,
was this before or after Neil Strauss's book, The Game, where he defined alpha males as the people who have it easy? It had no connection I could see in your eyes.
No. I would assume much before that. It was back in 2006 when I started that. So
okay, and so this is when you had your makeover business, your, what is it called? Mm-hmm. Personal stylist. I've worked with personal stylists. It's so freaking helpful.
Oh, yeah.
So helpful. How did you get your clients?
That this was back when I was able to advertise with Google, for a very, very, very reasonable per click price. And I didn't know anything. I had my assistant from my fitness center. Once that closed and I filed bankruptcy, it was, a situation where I said, "Hey, I think I want to start this image consulting company. Would you be interested?" She was just learning, my assistant Debbie, who's still with me today. "Would you be interested in building me a website? And if I get any clients, I'll give you 25% of whatever I make." And she's like, "Sure." And so, did that, and then learned how to create little, you know, ads. And my budget was, I think, $300 a month, and I was getting clients. And this was back when you could get, you know, click throughs and you could advertise on Google for, you know, without spending $50,000 a month.
This is the imalpha.com.
imalpham.com?
imalpham.com, of course. I'm right on the website. And so you were starting to get customers there. And then 2007, which is about a year after you got started, your wife gave you a video camera. For what?
Mm-hmm. Just, she didn't know what to get me. And so, and that's funny because it sat in a box for a year. I didn't know what to do with it. I thought she wanted to, you know, make some sexy home videos. That wasn't the case. And so I'm like, what do I need a video camera for? And so, it sat in a box. And, the story is I went on a reality show with Vivica Fox called Glam God. And I got kicked off the first day. And I went home. I said, I'm going to learn to use that video camera and I'm going to start making videos. And I'd been on YouTube, I would say probably 5 times prior to the first time I went to try to actually upload a video. I had no idea. And so.
So you told me about how you dressed well since kindergarten when you cared about the flare in your pants. did you also, like, you're good on camera. You've got this personality that makes you interesting. Before that experience that you just mentioned, did you know that you were good on camera? Did you know that you were a showman? Were you the type of person who would always ham it up in groups or something? No.
Probably. So one of the other byproducts to growing up and moving schools and in that scenario is that I became very good at reading people, and I figured out how to become friends with people really fast and have people like me. That was something that I think I really was worried about. I mean, when you're a young teenager, you know, of course you want people to like you. And so, that was something that I developed. And so my personality, it's always kind of been there. And when the video camera thing happened, I mean, I look back at some of my earlier videos when I first started, and it was not the case. I mean, this is something where you get better with practice, I assure you. And so, no, I was terrible when I first started, and it just kind of evolved over the course of the past 12 years.
This was 2008 when you started?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 2008.
Big recession, were you impacted by that at all?
I was broke. I just came off of bankruptcy. So anything I made, you know, $100, I was good. It didn't matter.
What was it like to come out of bankruptcy? Did you feel a sense of relief?
Oh my God, yeah. Because at that point, I think I bankrupted around, it was between, I can't remember exactly, but it was around like $300,000 to $400,000 in business loans, line of credit. At the point at which I my fitness center and everything failed, I was taking money off of my credit cards to pay my staff. I mean, I was broke. The Christmas before my bankruptcy, I went to buy my wife a Christmas present, and it was a little picture of a giraffe. And I looked at my thing. I'm like, okay. And at this point, I was driving a beer cart at a country club to put gas in my car when that whole thing sort of went down in terms of my fitness center. And I looked, and I had like $57 and like 27 cents. I saw this giraffe that my wife really liked, and I'm like, okay, it's 55. I've got some change. I can pay the tax and this and that purchase. And then the interest the next day, that shut my credit card off. And that was the last time I ever bought anything on credit. And from that point, that was the end. And so, yes, it was an incredible sense of relief when I was able to, you know, sort of start again.
I didn't realize you were married at the time. Did you at all worry that you would lose your wife, lose your marriage? Because no, not at all.
No, never.
No.
No.
Why?
She always made more money. Because we always had a great relationship. And I think that she always saw that I was a hard worker. It just wasn't working out at the time. And so my wife always, she had a great job. My wife is an incredibly hard worker. One of the things, she left home when she was 16, and her father died when she was young, and her mother at the time was, you know, having some substance abuse issues. And so she left home at 16 and, you know, still graduated high school, and she started working and, you know, worked her way up sort of the corporate ladder. And she's somebody that I admire greatly. And so
did you take her in through bankruptcy too? Did she also go bankrupt?
No. She was fine. Everything was just in my name. Yeah. And I think at that point it was prior to us getting married. We were living together.
Okay.
But we were not actually married. We got married, I believe in, hold on, 5, 6, or 7.
And you were comfortable like taking her through this or asking her to marry you?
Comfortable? No, not comfortable. Andrew, of course not. Yeah. No, it was horrible. It was horrible. And it was humiliating. But I knew that if I just figured bench working, I would figure something out. I think the hardest thing about that point in my life, the bankruptcy, the business failing, it wasn't that I was broke, because that wasn't the issue. The issue for me was not knowing what my next step was. I didn't have a goal or a dream anymore. And so when that went away, when I realized that, okay, this isn't going to be what makes me successful, that was the hardest part, not knowing what was next. I never had a plan B. I was always, and I am still, the type of person that I just have one plan, and I'm so laser focused, and I have the ability to work really hard and stay focused when things aren't fun. And when I lost that dream, that was the hardest part for me, because I didn't know where to go next.
Let me ask you something. I've got to do my first sponsor. As a person who's been in the sponsorship content game for years, maybe you can give me some advice. I had ClickFunnels as a sponsor. The whole thing there was I was promoting the fact that people could create landing pages that then turn visitors into email subscribers and email subscribers into customers and so on. That was what ClickFunnels paid me for. I think I didn't do a great job for them. And so they said, Andrew, why don't you promote the podcast instead? It's not trackable. It's fine. Just tell your people if they like your podcast, they should go listen. I don't want to screw up twice. What do you think makes for a really good ad? Like if I have, it's called Traffic Secrets, the podcast. What advice would you give me for how to make this podcast ad a good ad for them, effective?
See, that's the one thing podcasts are a different animal. You know, the reason why I'm able to sell and be effective for my advertisers, and the reason why they come back year after year, month after month, is because I build so much value. I build an entire piece of content around this one thing, solving one problem. And so, you know, what is the problem that this podcast is solving? And I think, you know, it's easier to pitch that click funnel.
How do you know?
Honestly.
Give me an example. What's someone who you do? I know this is kind of supposed to be the ad for ClickFunnels. Mm-hmm. I can't stop looking at your freaking thumbnails as I'm looking for an example. You nailed it with the one about how to cut your own hair. This is so perfect. No wonder.
Well, that one, I'll tell you that story. That was the viral video at the right time.
Yeah.
And yeah, man. For my product and my business, that was one good idea I had. Just one.
So what's an example of something that you've done, a content that you created for a sponsor, and how did you understand the problem? Dude, it's not just that one. How about this one? 7 awkward guy problems girls won't talk about. The freaking thumbnail on that. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm not going to.
Don't describe it, Andrew.
The thumbnails are great. It's a dude wearing nothing, holding his hands between his legs.
That was for, okay. So that one was for Chassis, which is a powder that you use for preventing, you know, swampy, musky nuts and swamp ass.
Got it. And so
there's the problem. So
you're finding clear problems that people aren't talking about. You make it interesting to talk about it I feel like you want to say something as I'm talking over you.
No, Andrew, you talk all you want. I've talked way too much about things that people probably aren't interested in already. But no, it's identifying that problem. And the reason why I'm able to create so much content is because I do have all of these advertising opportunities. And so it forces me creatively to look at things a little bit differently. And so, you know, 12 years in, you give me a what is the podcast about, Andrew?
It's about how to get traffic without, at this point, it looks like they're emphasizing the fact that you don't need to buy traffic, buy people coming over to your website. So maybe that's the hook. Maybe what I should be saying is, look, I used to interview entrepreneurs all the time who are like you, who said, I found an easy, cheap way to buy ads on Google. I found an easy, cheap way to buy ads on Facebook. Today, even cheap ads are a big risk for
people. Wasting your money. It's the message I think for that one is, look, you're wasting money. And this is a little trick and a little secret that's going to allow you.
This is not an environment to waste money in. If you want to learn how to get traffic, don't come to me. I'm not as good at it as Russell Brunson, the guy who created ClickFunnels. It's this tool that's being used by thousands of businesses to get traffic to their sites and convert them into customers. He found out what's worked well for him to make this tool successful, the software company successful, but also what's worked for his customers. And he wrote it in a book. And I know that a lot of people who are listening to me are not reading books right now. Instead, since they're listening to my podcast, they might prefer to listen to a podcast. And so that's what Traffic Secrets is about. If you go to whatever podcast app you're listening to me on and you just subscribe to Traffic Secrets, they will not know that I get credit for it or anything. I won't know it. It's not about making us feel good. It's not about me getting credit, but I'm telling you, you're just going to like it. And you're going to reach out to me and you're going to say, Andrew, that thing was great, because Russell knows how to tell stories, knows how to keep people entertained. And he's been doing this for a very long time for a reason. He's good at it. I was going to say damn good at it, but Russell's like a smiling guy who I don't think ever says the word damn. He might even say darn, but that's too close. He's good at it. Traffic Secrets and whatever podcast app you're listening on. So the first video that you did, your wife gives you the camera. You finally say, all right, I'm going to do it. You post the video. How'd you feel about it? Did you feel like, oh, I know I could do better. This is not right.
Oh yeah. I'll tell you a little secret that I've never told. Actually, I told somebody on a podcast a few weeks ago for the first time. I've never really talked about this too much because it's embarrassing. It was incredibly nerve-wracking for me. And so I would be drunk after every video that I posted for the first like 2 years.
Because you were drinking while you're doing it?
Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. I would always film my videos on Friday. And I would go and I would get like a 6-pack of beer. I would set it on like a credenza. And this was also back post bankruptcy when I was still trying to figure things out. And I was not dealing with things as well as I should have. And so I was utilizing, you know, alcohol to sort of self-medicate and handle some of the just my demons and my issues. And so during that time, I'd set a 6-pack next to me. By the time I would be finished my video, I'd be absolutely drunk. And I'd be through that 6-pack. And then, you know, obviously that did not last. And I still remember the first video I did where I didn't actually use alcohol. And so that's how easy it was for me.
Are you drunk in this one? Do you look drunk in that?
Oh, definitely drunk in that one.
Wow. You don't look drunk to me. So I heard one of my guests say that he drank a shot of whiskey before going on CNBC, and that's what helped him be good. And so I said, you know, I'm going to listen. I'm going to try it. So I took a shot of whiskey. It didn't work. I took another one. It didn't really get me going. I took a third. I was so sleepy. I couldn't do it. I put it off for the next day. And that happened like 4 or 5 times. And I just had to give it up. And now I can't drink before. But these videos, unless you probably deleted the ones from 10 years ago.
I deleted. I've deleted. Yeah, you did. So when I started, I was trying to figure out what was sort of what my voice was, what people wanted to watch. And at the time they were watching things that were crude, that were sort of outlandish. And so I thought that's what I had to be. And so I've deleted a lot of videos that I said things that I regret saying.
Like what? What type of things?
Videos about being insensitive about, you know, men's makeup, being insensitive about, you know, there was one video that I was just mortified about that I made some, you know, sort of ignorant comment about Madonna adopting children, like stupid stuff like that.
Just to get attention. I totally get it. Yeah. I remember that happening at the time. I remember TechCrunch being especially good at it. And I happened to have a drink with someone from TechCrunch, one of the writers. And I said, I think I need to go in this direction because no one's paying attention to me. He goes, people are paying attention to you. Trust me, I'm in the TechCrunch world. You don't want to be that. You've got something. But truthfully, it helped you get attention. It helped TechCrunch get attention.
No, it didn't. No, it backfired for me. Everything for me went when I stopped that and when I dropped the act and just got authentic and let people actually you know, get to know me a little bit more and be authentic. That's when everything started to change for me. Because I think that's what I think the audience, any audience can sniff out bullshit. And when things are fake, that was definitely not a winning combination or formula for me. And when I just was like, okay, I'm going to cry on film. I'm going to, you know, tell you about my deepest, darkest issues, because if my story can help other people, then it's worth the pain or embarrassment of me actually talking about it.
How long before you made real money or any money from these videos?
This was back when I started. You had to have 10,000 subscribers and apply for YouTube partnership in order to make any ad revenue from the videos. And so I would say probably 5 years in, I messed around with e-products. In this world of online sort of entrepreneurs and business, you know, e-products were the big thing, right? And my first Shark Tank appearance, I was selling, you know, the Alpha M style system, which was actually a DVD that I'd ship people. That's how tech savvy I am, Andrew. And so I tried doing like a style guide, but I'm not really a great writer. And I tried the e-product route and just came to the realization, I just don't like e-products and I'm not good at them. I don't want to sell them. I want to sell other things. And
were you making money from those e-products?
Yeah, a little bit. Not enough. I started a membership website as well. I Am Alpha M originally was a membership website that had, I think at the time that I shut it down, I was making $100,000 a year. And that was more money than I had ever imagined.
But what year was this roughly? 2012?
Probably around 20. No, not 2012. Much okay. More recent than that. Probably.
I'm looking at Internet Archive to get a sense of what the site used to look like.
Yeah, it's when I started. When I Am Alpha M started, it was then.
2011 is when it started, okay. According to Internet Archive. So at that point, you were doing that, and that didn't feel especially good, but you were bringing in some money.
I was bringing in money, but it was the amount of content. I had a paywall. You know, people would pay for a membership, and I was creating three videos a day Monday, or I was posting three videos a day Monday through Friday. And so it was obviously not a sustainable model. And this was back when I thought that if I just had a lot of traffic going to my website, if I just gave away the content for free, then I would make money, because this was back when, you know, the Art of Manliness and these other websites and Ask Men, I wanted to create a website that just had an incredible amount of traffic and thought that that was going to be how to move the needle financially by selling advertising. And ultimately that didn't work out either. And so I doubled down on YouTube and just kept putting content out there.
And they got better at monetizing traffic for you and for other creators. That started to make money for you, significant money, in what year? It looks like, I can't tell here from my number, from my data. It's about 5 years into building into starting the channel, 6 years, you're starting to make some real money from the channel, enough to
live? Then give up my personal training?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yep. Somewhere around there. Okay. And then since you didn't like digital products, is the first, I was going to say actual product, but first physical product, Pete and Pedro?
No, it was M Accessories. I would string beads together to make bracelets. That model, what's that?
Okay. And what was the problem with that?
I would sit there for 3 hours a night.
Oh, you mean you literally would do this?
I literally, it's funny.
You are a freaking hard worker. Three videos a day, stringing the things yourself.
It's not that I'm a hard worker. I'm just dumb, because I didn't realize that, you know what? I could probably pay the women at the store source this. I didn't understand any of that. And so, so my solution was, let me make these things myself. I would go to the bead store and I would every night sit there and string them together and ship them off. And that model, once again, was not sustainable. And so we had to try something else, Andrew.
How is it that you're a guy who started out with this sense of, I wouldn't say inferiority complex, that's too dramatic, but you had this fear of expressing yourself. To this day, I think you told our producer, I sometimes have gone on podcasts and when they say, what books do you recommend? I'll like lie and come up with something just to sound smart. How is it that none of these setbacks shattered your sense of confidence, kept you from continuing? What was it that kept you going?
Honestly, I think it's fitness, to be honest. I think that's part of it.
Because you saw results from fitness and it made you feel good about
yourself? No. When you exercise, when you lift weights, it does something to your brain. I think David Goggins, has made the reference of, you know, exercise calluses your brain and allows you to handle. And I might have even screwed that quote up.
I don't remember him saying that, but he does have these lines.
Yeah, it calluses your brain and it allows you to deal with stressful situations because you're actively seeking that pain every time you go into the gym, you go in and you exercise. And so that was probably, I would say fitness is the best decision, and going to work out was the best decision I ever made.
So I get that. I have that too from running. It forces me to just keep running no matter what. What you feel, foot pain, you committed to this marathon, you got to stay with the marathon. There's no water, you might collapse. What's the worst thing? You get this story that you're so badass that you collapse, and next time you have to run, you're going to feel like you could do it because you collapsed that one time, right? I get it. The problem for me with that is it makes me continue no matter what. You know,
well,
it builds the endurance, not the adjust. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that was the issue with the fitness center, is that I would have sold my kidney. I'm not smart enough to know when it's time to hang up the towel. I mean, that business, literally, I had to be bankrupt. I had to be broke. There was no other option for me to continue to go. But when you fail to that magnitude, when you have all of your hopes, your dreams, you're driving a beer cart at the age of like 30, 32 years old, you know, how much worse? You try something, it doesn't work out. How much worse than that can it get without, you know, obviously like everybody being healthy and all that. And so when you fail to that degree, you know, when for 20 years you had the idea of this is what success looked like, when that's gone, you know, what's the worst thing that happens? I try something, it doesn't work. I have to come and, you know, face people and say, I tried, but oh, well, it didn't work. Like, okay,
and did that
I can
also
do that.
Force you to stop sticking with things beyond where you should?
A little bit. Yeah. One of the beautiful things that happened out of that bankruptcy, it forced me to realize that debt is one of the nastiest things out there in terms of stealing and robbing your joy and creativity. When I had bought, can I curse real
quick? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. When I had $5,000 in my bank account, that's when I had fuck you money. Because for the first time, what happened, it was crazy. For my entire life, from the age of, you know, as long as I can remember, I mean, we were on welfare and food stamps and all that, you know, and then my entire life, it was just trying and scraping together enough money to pay my bills, to eat, to pay rent. And for the first time in my life, when I had $5,000 in my bank account, that's when I didn't, for one day, I didn't think about money. And I thought to myself, wait a second. At the end of the day, I thought, I didn't worry about how I'm going to eat tomorrow. That's crazy. The next day, same thing happened. And it was at that point in my life that everything changed, because it allowed for the creativity and that huge piece of my brain that was occupied with basic needs and necessities of making money. It allowed me to use it for other creative ways, and that was the biggest game changer for me. $5,000, and so
you know,
I don't know why I don't know why I told you.
No,
that.
I get that. I've got to tell you that for me, having a lot of debt also did that. There's a sense that, what is it, burn your ships, and you have no choice but to succeed. I find that that is true to some degree. At some point, though, you realize it is overwhelmingly crippling to have so much debt. Owe so many people so many things that you can't fail, and your mind just can't stop thinking about how you can't fail because all these bad things are going to happen, that it's distracting. And I'm with you. I've gone through deep debt. I'm never doing it again.
Well, that was the, I think that's how I got started on that. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah. And so from that point of filing bankruptcy, I decided that whatever I do, I'm not going to have debt. I'm going to self-fund everything. And if this means I need to grow a little bit slower, that's fine. And I don't necessarily, a lot of people, you know, say that I don't use my money, you know, properly. You know, they say you shouldn't pay off real estate. They say, you know.
And you do pay off real estate.
What's that?
You pay off real estate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any debt. I want to be in a position, I've said this, I want to be in a position financially that if the universe explodes and the internet crashes, that I'm okay and my family's okay. Well, guess what happened this past month?
Yeah, yeah.
The universe exploded and it was like, all right, you know, I can weather the storm. I'm okay.
Yeah, that is such a good position to be in. Did your sales go down since COVID?
No.
April sales didn't go down. March 2020 didn't go down.
No, and here's the interesting thing. So my advertising for YouTube went down because people were scared. A lot of
you mean advertising revenue coming in.
Yes, advertising revenue went down. But my other two businesses that sell grooming products actually went up and have had record months.
I've seen that. Why do you think that is? I've interviewed many
reasons.
Why?
And there are a few reasons why it happened for me. It was kind of like the perfect storm. When I saw that this was happening, there a few decisions were made. Number one was, okay, I need to start I had gotten out of the habit of doing like crazy discounts and incentivizing people and offer after offer after offer. But I thought, all right, I need to support my staff. I've got people that rely on me. So I need to kind of make enough money right now that I can, you know, that I can support things. And so I decided to embark on a marketing blitz of my audience and offer them great incentives if they're interested in buying. The other thing I did was I filmed a video about how to cut my hair. That is one of my most popular videos that I filmed. I think it was 7 or 8 years ago. And I realized that YouTube likes new content. And so why don't I saw the sort of the writing on the wall. We're locked up. People are still going to want to cut their hair. And so let me film another video. That video ended up going viral. And in there, I do pitch my Pete and Pedro hair products. And then, another thing we did when we saw that the market was softening in terms of paid advertising and traffic, we doubled down and really went after it, and we're getting incredible, you know, 6, 7, 8 times spend on cold conversions and so,
buying ads.
Well, yeah, ads for our products.
Yeah,
you know, advertise. Yeah,
the founder of Brewmate told me the same thing. I can't remember the exact number. I think he said that it's like 2017 advertising rates on Facebook. It's at least 40% discount. Is that what you're finding?
Oh yeah, it's crazy. And I just hired a new agency to handle the paid traffic. And it's insane. So that Pete and Pedro is having a record month by probably $50,000 this month. And
over last year,
over our best month ever. No, over our best month ever, which was last December.
Christmas. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wait. So you're saying April 2020 is going to beat December 2019?
It beat it a week ago.
What? Yeah. Wowee.
Yeah, it was crazy. And it's funny, going into the month, I said to everybody, I sort of figured out, I'm like, okay, you know, with salaries, with everything, I need to make, for me to stay in the black, I need to make about, in that business, I need to make about $100,000 a month. And so I went to my staff, I said, $4,000 a day. That is the goal. If we can do $4,000 a day, we're good. We can ride this out. I'm not having to dig into my pockets to support everybody, and nobody has anything to worry about. And I also told them, and I think one of the things that helped is that, you know, financially I'm in a good position and I live well below my means. And so I went to them when this all started. I said, listen, I said, I've prepared. I'm good. You guys need to just continue to help me out, do your job, and we're going to get through this. Nobody's getting laid off, so take that off the plate. Just focus on doing a great job. And lo and behold, things just, you know, just a few things fell into place, and it was amazing.
Wow.
it was crazy.
Look at this. Obviously, the podcast listeners can't see it, but look at this old video from years ago where you were cutting your own hair.
That was one of the, yeah, that's one.
Isn't that something?
It's funny, right?
Yeah. Like I see your videos getting better from the camera angle point of view, but lighting took you a little while to get into.
I'm still figuring that out.
Your lighting now is killer. It's great.
How's this? Is it good?
Nice backdrop. I like how there's like that nice circle around you. I've got to fix this thing.
I still do all my editing and all my thumbnail creation.
I don't understand why. A lot of the big YouTube creators still do their own editing. They say it's because the creative process you think is what's on camera. You don't understand that that's part of it. The creative process is also in the editing. Is
yeah.
that right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I love it. Antonio, our friend, that was one of the first things he got rid of. He's like, get off my plate. He's got staff to help him. For me, it's, you know what? If it requires me 3 hours a day in order to Monday through Friday to create my video. And I still love the process of editing. I love the process of filming and conceptualizing a thumbnail. I love the process. And I feel like once I don't, when I hand that over, I don't want to lose that sort of that je ne sais quoi that I feel I still have at times, because I'm still loving the work and I'm willing to do the work. And if me working 3 hours a day or 4 hours a day, 3 hours a day, making a video is going to allow me to grow and scale my other businesses and entities, you know, okay,
so this,
I'll do it.
This thumbnail of you holding a beer with an X in front of it and Pornhub with a check in front of it. I know that you edited, you designed that, I guess, in Photoshop, but did you also take a photo, both those photos yourself too?
Yeah. Yeah.
This
yeah.
Is, you selfieing the whole thing.
Yeah, no. I got a remote on my camera. I have a remote.
To that
I take
degree. All my, okay. Finally said, you're working insane hours and you say, I should talk about HostGator first. My second sponsor is a company called HostGator. I've actually been looking at, I am alphaM.com. It is a WordPress site that has, yes, changed the direction of the site over the years, but it's a WordPress site. I'm looking at the tools you use. You're using standard form tools, using all the standard stuff. Anyone out there who's listening to me who has not started a site right now, this is the time to be creative. I am noticing, Aaron, two different groups of people who I interview who are doing well. Number one, e-commerce. Actually, three. E-commerce, anything grocery related is doing well right now. And creative businesses are doing well, right? Like the Teachables of the world that help people teach and sell their stuff online. Gumroad, Shopify has talked publicly about how their numbers are going up. Creativity now is on the rise and people have the capacity to absorb it. If you're listening to me and you say, I don't know what to create, don't create anything good. Create something bad. First version, put it up on HostGator, adjust it. I've seen Aaron's site develop over the years or not develop over the years. And still, it looks gorgeous right now. I was taking a tour down memory lane on your archive.org site. You went to HostGator's offices one time, right?
Yep, absolutely.
What did you see over there?
Oh man, it was the first time I'd ever been to like a tech startup. It was right before they were going public. And it was amazing. I saw, you know, I could get gummy bears. I'm like, wait a second. I can just walk up and get a handful of gummy bears. And then, you know, they had all these pods. It was amazing. The office was incredible. Everybody there was so incredibly friendly. They're just a great group of guys and gals. And, it was an absolute tremendous experience for me to be there.
If you're thinking about going and getting started, just go do it right now. You could always cancel. They've got a nice refund policy. And if you're not happy with them after the refund policy or they change or something happens, you just take your website and you go to a different host. All you have to do is go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. They'll give you a really low price if you use that /Mixergy and you'll be connected to me forever, which means you have a problem with it. With any of my sponsors, I'm here for you. My whole team is here for you. Hostgator.com/Mixergy. Hostgator.com/Mixergy. And I'm grateful to them for sponsoring throughout the years. I thought they would just come back and say, Andrew, cut it all out. No more ads. We're done. I go, no, I'm so glad that they didn't do that. So when you decided you were going to get into physical products, you decided, okay, bracelets are not the thing. I'm going to create grooming products. Who's going to create it for you? Who's going to run it so that you had time to create your thumbnails?
Well, that's the problem, Andrew. I tried to do everything for a while.
Were you like literally mixing the thing up in your bathtub?
Or? No. When I started, Pete and Pedro, my good friend and hairstylist, Stephen Posta, I went to him and I said, hey, you know, I'm not really satisfied with American Crew. This was back in 2011. I got all my numbers here for you. Actually, it was 2013, Andrew. I got all my numbers because I knew that you were going to ask me stuff. And so
your friends warned you that. Yes.
They said, you better know your numbers. No, bullshit. What's that?
Yeah. So hit me with the numbers. Yeah.
2013, $30,000. 2014, $65,000. Now, mind you, this was me doing nothing more than just coming on my YouTube channel and talking. I didn't have any staff. Nobody was helping me. I was answering every email other than my assistant, Debbie, was obviously still involved in helping me.
And then, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the actual product was being made for you by whom and labeled by
whom? I'm not saying whom it was. It was my original five products were private labeled, though. My buddy, uh-huh, Steve, and I said, hey, do you know any labs? And so I ended up, you know, vetting six different labs here domestically in the US and found products that I absolutely loved. And I loved all five of their products in their line. And that was kind of how I got started. Since then, I have basically five or six different vendors. I work with different labs. Things have changed, but I still...
Okay, but it's you going on camera saying, I've got this stuff. What was the first product that you created a video for? Do you remember?
It was just all my products. It was, I had a putty, a pomade, a clay, a paste, and a cream. So five, I had enough money. I ordered four boxes, four cases, 24 units of each case. Of five different products. I had them all laid out in my bedroom. I bought some boxes and I, you know, had Debbie build me another website and I waited. And year number one, I made $30,000.
And was that a problem for you or just nice?
No,
revenue?
I did. I had no expectations. No. And that's, I had no expectations. This was something where it was like, let me see if I can do it. And I did it. And then it was like, wow, the fact that anybody bought anything, I was thrilled with. And it wasn't something where I had like, okay, next year, I've got the strategy because I've always had sort of the entrepreneurial spirit. And I was, and YouTube was my main sort of driver at this point, and I was still making money, or I was making money at YouTube. There wasn't the pressure for me to have to make a lot of money in order for me to take revenue or profits home to support myself. It was literally a place where I could just sort of see what happens and see what develops. And unfortunately, this is one of the reasons why it didn't grow as fast as I felt that it should have, because okay. I didn't pay it the attention. I treated it like my stepchild. It was like, oh yeah, it's cool. Hey, oh my God, I made 30,000. That's crazy. Next year, 65,000. Whoa, that's crazy. Mind blown. And then the next year it went up to 268. And that's when I'm like, wait a second, this is actually kind of probably a business, but I need help. And so I ended up going on Shark Tank for that, and thinking that they were going to be the answers to all of my entrepreneurial problems. And that didn't work out either.
Second appearance on Shark Tank.
Yep. Second appearance on Shark Tank.
You did it really for money or because you wanted attention?
No, I needed help. It wasn't about the money at that point.
Why didn't you come into it? There's so many investors who are investing in direct to consumer space, especially back then when you were starting to get going, right? But you didn't know them.
I didn't know them. Yeah.
Oh, you knew Shark Tank. You didn't know, like, to say who's investing in Harry's and Dollar Shave Club and who missed out on that might be pissed off and would want to come invest me. Got it.
No. Okay. No, not at all. And so, 2016 then went up to, from 268 and 15 went up to 813. And then from there it was 2017 was 1.6 and onward and upward from there. I mean, so, and it was growing despite me not doing anything. Like literally I hurt my business so much because I didn't know what I didn't know. And I was comfortable not having any pressure on it. And so I hurt my business, like, period. And then a year ago, I ended up hiring somebody that I've known for a long time, Mike Levy, from the Grooming Lounge. He and I have become friends over the years of me promoting Grooming Lounge products. And that's when it was me committing to, all right, I am willing to grow this business. Let's do this. And a lot of people ask me, they said, when you hired Mike, did it take a lot of work off your plate? I said, no, it gave me work because it was stuff I wasn't doing before. Now he's telling me that I need to create this extra content. I need to make this decision. We need to have this meeting. We need to do that. And so it's given me a lot more work, but it's super exciting now. And I'm all in terms of just loving the process again. And I needed somebody to help me and to really help direct the ship and allow me to continue to do what I do.
Did Mike also create is it Brain board game, or is that just that's a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's one of his pet projects that he and a partner created. You're going deep, Andrew.
I'm looking all over the place as you're talking about people.
He's going to be so happy. He's going to be so happy that you mentioned that.
I wonder if that's doing well right now. Board games. No.
Board games, probably. I would imagine.
Is it? It's a downloadable game or not?
Let me see. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I had it. I had it on the screen.
You're one of six customers, Andrew. And then he also wrote a book. He also wrote a book when he was getting out of college. And he was a published author. He's self-published author. So
I got to go look for that. How did you know then what to add? You told me about the different products, and I kind of truncated them in the intro. How do you know what to add? What you can get into? What's going to grow?
Just my own curiosity and interest.
So enemy.com.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, I didn't realize you're selling bracelets on Enemy. Yeah. Is that they used to sell?
Similar. But I don't make these.
You're a good looking guy. I'm just scrolling through. You look good. I wonder, like,
it's the sunglasses, Andrew. It's the sunglasses.
No, it's the pose. It's the beard that's just trimmed just right. It looks like you don't give a rat's ass, but you probably spend some time.
This is my business. I better be. That's why I have to still exercise and not just get quarantine fat. I got a business to run, Andrew.
What kind of workout are you doing now? I'm allowed to go for runs outside. This is great. What are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm doing my normal routine. I have instead of going to the gym, though, I've got a little home gym that I use. I do cardio every single day and then lift weights 4 to 5 times a week.
How'd you know that enemy.com was going to be your thing doing glasses?
Mm-mm, I didn't. That was another one where it was, let me see if I can do this. The story goes like this, Andrew. I was in Chicago. A friend of mine, my business, Tiege Hanley, the skincare company, is based out of Chicago. I went for my run right close to Oak Street. You've got the lake. And so I was walking back. A buddy of mine, Zach, owns a company called Glasses Limited, which is right there on Oak Street in that beautiful, super expensive place. And on his window, as I was walking by, there was a sign that said, "Good is the enemy of great." And I thought, enemy, that's a really cool word. That would be a really cool sunglass company. I love sunglasses. And so I went back to my hotel room before my meeting, my quarterly meeting, and I start going to, you know, HostGator, and I start looking, and I'm like, oh, you know, I wonder if enemy, you know, sunglasses, enemy shades, I couldn't find. And so I ended up getting enemy sunglasses, enemy shades. And from that point, it was, let me just see if I can create a sunglass company. It would be my first time manufacturing a custom product overseas. And so, let me see if I can do it.
Just to see. It wasn't that you thought there's good market here if Warby Parker did it for, no, mm-mm. None of that.
No, I had enough money. It wasn't about that. It was about my other businesses were doing fine. It was, I'd regret it if I didn't try it. And so for me, I just don't want to regret things. If there's something that I'm really sort of interested in, let me try it. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, I think that's fine too. And I think that might be an entrepreneurial lesson, sort of takeaway for the audience is just, you know, scratch the itch. And if it doesn't work out, it's okay. Don't beat yourself up. Try. Why not? What the hell is the worst thing that can happen? You're driving a beer car at 30 years old.
Go bankrupt. Apparently you did okay. you own enemy.com. Michael Seiger from Domain Sherpa is going to want to know how much you paid for that. That's
$43,000.
That's it? For enemy.com?
My threshold was 100. And I said, okay, I found out it was for sale. I'm like, I'm like, okay, let me just ask him how much. And so I said, let me see. And he came in, I think he wanted like 50 or something. And then we negotiated back and
forth.
That
was it. That's a great price, don't you think?
Oh yeah. Considering I've gotten multiple people interested in buying it since then.
I wonder why they didn't ask for more money on that.
It wasn't being used. I don't know.
It's a great domain too, because it's an easy one to write out. And then one final thing, our producer asked you, what is the big challenge here? It looks like a pretty, beyond the early part, looks like a pretty happy-go-lucky business. And you said, my big challenge is getting out of my own way. I wonder how. Actually, I've got a follow-up on to that. What do you mean by that?
Once again, this is something where in order for me to, in terms of enemy, is that the question? Or is that just in general?
For yourself. You said that getting out of your own way is a problem.
The best decisions that I have made, it's not because I'm smart. It's because I finally stopped and allowed other people to do what they do better than me. And, when it came to advertising, everything got better when I allowed my best friend, Terry, to come in and handle that aspect of my business. When I finally said yes to our friend, Antonio Centeno, at that point, I hated him because he was in my space. He was on YouTube. I'm like, who is this son of a bitch trying to do what I'm doing? And he reached out and was like, hey, you want to get together and meet in Anaheim and we can, you know, I'm like, what's he want? He's trying to steal something from me. And that was the mentality. And it was him, honestly, that taught me so much about the fact that you can accomplish so much more when you surround yourself with amazing people and uplift everybody, as opposed to having that scarcity mentality that I think I lived with my entire life up until him. So let people, I still have a problem getting out of my own way though, because I am somewhat of apparently a control freak.
This is what I wanted to close it out on. By the way, when we keep mentioning Antonio, he is the creator of Real Men Style. It's realmenstyle.com and also
Real Men Real Style, Andrew.
Oh, excuse me. Real Men Real Style. See, I keep flubbing these freaking titles. Real Men Real Style. His video, I think, taught me how to shave using a real razor. I think he does one where he shows you how to use the old razor, but I'm pretty sure he's the one that showed me how to use like the non-electric razor, which I've used my whole life. But he's got more of a proper style and a proper mannerism about him, you know? Like when I think about me handling kids and being a father, it's like, I'm just kind of winging it. I got it. I look at him, I go, no wonder he's got a lot of kids. He's got like this self-control. He's got this almost fatherly appearance to him. Looks like I'd feel comfortable buying a jet from him the way he's dressed. What's your daily schedule? I keep hearing all the things that you do. I never ask guests about that, but now I'm finding myself being fascinated by your ability to get so much done.
So I wake up, I'm basically at work at 6 a.m. every morning. That's when I'm up. I used to go to Starbucks. Now I come to my office, you know, have coffee, work. That's when I sort of think and plan and strategize my video for the day. Answer emails. That's the quiet time that, and the morning is when I can actually be creative and think. Around 8 o'clock, I leave, I go exercise and, eat breakfast after that. I am back at work by 11 o'clock. That's when I start recording video and do that until about one. At that point, I will go to my warehouse where I have my grooming company, and, every day and just touch base and check in and see, make sure everybody's good. And then I typically will have a call a few times a week at around 2-3 o'clock with my company in Chicago. And after that, it's on to talk to Pete and Pedro or Mike Levy at Pete and Pedro. And then I'll sit and edit until about 6 o'clock, go home, exercise, eat dinner, and work and edit until I go to bed at around 10 o'clock Monday through Friday.
And you and your wife are still good considering?
Oh, like, yeah, man. We're good.
When's the time that you see her and all this? How do you keep that going?
I see her all the time. Now that we're quarantined, I see her all the time. No, she understands, and this is something, it's just, it works for us. We don't have children, and you know, it works for us. We see each other and we have, you know, great time together, and our weekends or evenings, and we're good.
After 10 o'clock, you get together.
No, she's like, asleep by like,
she's asleep by then. The yeah. Best advice I got was, I remember Jason Calacanis used to be a maniac. He still kind of is. He's now I guess a full-time angel investor. He used to talk about all the things that he did. And I never saw him and his wife together. And I finally said to him, how do you keep it together when you're working so many hours? He said, Andrew, he said, basically, I'm the master of the grand gestures. I said, like what? He goes, you see that mountain over there? Yeah, we were in Santa Monica. I go, I will take her up climbing on that mountain. We will then have a surprise picnic meal. And then she'll have this giant experience that she could go and tell her friends on. It's memorable. And it's not an everyday thing, but if I'm going to do it, it's going to be that big. And I thought, that's what I need to do with Olivia. So I've been taking that to heart.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Now under quarantine, what I did is a fire in the backyard, and I built a tent and we sat in there and we talked without any distractions. All right.
That's excellent.
Pete and Pedro, enemy.com, Alpha M, so many different brands. And you look good through it all. You should be like half dead at this point. But you look good through it all. Congratulations on all the success. Thank you so much for being on here. And I just really enjoyed talking to you. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first is the company that will host your website, right? Get on it already. This is the time to do it. Go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you really even hate me and you think maybe I'm doing it for selfish reasons, just get rid of the Mixergy at the end of that URL and just go to Hostgator and start your site. I'm telling you, it's going to be great for you. And now that this interview is over, I urge you to go and check out another podcast. It is called Traffic Secrets with Russell Brunson. Get some specifics into your head and just enjoy his storytelling style. Thank you. Thanks so much, Aaron.
Thank you so much, Andrew.